Welcome to the Deep Dive. We're here to streamline your understanding by really getting into the source material and pulling out the key insights. Today, we are tackling something pretty fundamental, I think. It's this constant tension in strategy, in leadership, secrecy. When do you keep things hidden? We're diving into this quite sharp manifesto that argues for what it calls the open process. Basically, the idea that you should explain your evidence, your reasoning, why you're planning to do something, even if the plan itself seems a bit, you know, out there. And it sets this up against the, let's face it, very seductive closed process, you know, hiding your evidence, playing your cards close to your chest, the big reveal at the end. So the big question for us today is, when is that secrecy actually strategic? And maybe more importantly, when does it just get in the way? We've got some really compelling sources that weigh the appeal of the closed process against its, well, potentially huge hidden costs, especially for working together.
Exactly. And that collective cost is really the heart of it. The argument in these sources is that while that closed process feels great, you know, dramatically satisfying, like you're the puppet master, that very feeling might be stopping us from solving the big stuff. Shared challenges, we're talking global issues, climate instability, nuclear risks, even things like antibiotic resistance. The core delusion, the thing we apparently need to dismantle, is that central assumption behind the closed process. It's this this hubris, really, that the main actor you know is everything needed and everyone else is just, well, a pawn to be moved around.
It's the ultimate cool guy playbook, isn't it? And it's celebrated all over the place. I mean, think about Aaron Burr in Hamilton. His advice, talk less, smile more. Don't let them know what you're against or what you're for. Okay. He's challenging Hamilton's transparency, basically asking, why tell everyone what you think? You're just giving your enemies ammunition. And we have to kind of square that strategic thinking with, well, the world we actually live in, it's complex, interconnected. Problems often need more than just one brain, right? Okay, so let's really unpack this allure of the closed process. It's not new, is it? It goes way back. You've got historical figures like Burr, sure, but political thinkers, even literary geniuses, have championed this for ages. It seems universally popular, even if, as the manifesto argues, it's often misapplied when the stakes get really high. The classic starting point is often Machiavelli, right? In The Prince, he kind of suggests that a ruler who's cunning, maybe even deceitful, achieves more than one who's just rigidly honest all the time. It's about results, using leverage, surprise.
And in fiction, well, Sherlock Holmes is the absolute master, isn't he? Holmes almost never explains what he's doing step by step. He routinely tricks everyone, even Watson, uses his friends like tools, really, and then only reveals the whole brilliant scheme right at the very end. The surprise is kind of the whole payoff in those stories.
Totally. That's why we love him.
And we can see this cunning in action, like in The Adventure of the Norwood Builder. Holmes figures out where the villain, Jonas Oldacre, is hiding. But does he just announce it? No. He sets up this elaborate fake fire alarm, straw, smoke, the whole thing.
Why?
Exactly. To trick Oldacre into revealing himself dramatically, it makes the capture theatrical, you know, not just procedural. Uh-huh. Or a scandal in Bohemia, another fake fire alarm, this time with the plumber's rocket, to trick Irene Adler into showing where the photo was hidden. Master manipulator.
Right. That dramatic certainty is so appealing. But this same mindset, it pops up in modern self-help too, doesn't it? Like Robert Greene's The 48 Laws of Power. Greene sort of takes that Burr's strategy and just applies it everywhere. But his focus is purely on getting ahead yourself, right? The general welfare isn't really part of the equation. He's got laws like Law 3, conceal your intentions. Never let anyone know the real goal.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they know, they might try to stop you.
And that really gets to the core cynicism, I think. The advice in books like Greene's is often basically don't commit to anyone or anything except yourself. Treat everyone else like, well, pawns in your rise to the top.
Ouch. Pawns.
Yeah. And the source material points out something interesting here. Machiavelli might have intended that kind of ruthless advice for a powerful prince, someone who maybe has to suspend normal ethics for the good of the whole state. But when Greene applies it just for, you know, climbing the corporate ladder or getting rich, that higher justification disappears. It becomes purely self-interested. And it shows this fundamental lack of respect, treating people, colleagues, partners, maybe even family as just instruments.
Okay, but hang on. Does the source just dismiss all secrecy then? I mean, surely sometimes you need strategic deception, like in politics or in the military. Isn't surprise sometimes crucial for the greater good?
That's a really fair point. And no, the manifesto doesn't say never be secret. It concedes that when you're facing a clear known adversary, a competitor, an enemy force, then yes, strategic secrecy makes sense. You don't broadcast your R&D secrets or your battle plans. The problem, according to the source, is when we start applying that closed process thinking to collaboration, to our own teams, our partners, or in situations where the goal is actually shared learning and problem solving, like tackling climate change. That's where it backfires.
Right. So if the closed process is really only for princes fighting enemies, what happens when the rest of us try it? The ordinary folks, the manifesto call them, Woosters and Watsons. Why does our scheming usually mess things up?
Well, fundamentally, it fails because it requires this massive assumption of basically omniscience. You have to believe you know everything that matters about the situation. You have to assume you understand exactly why everyone else is doing what they're doing and precisely what tiny nudge from you will make them do the big thing you want them to do. The complexity alone almost guarantees you'll get it wrong. Misunderstandings pile up.
So it's just too complicated for one person to manage perfectly.
Exactly. And then there's the psychological damage it causes. This is pretty crucial. When you decide to deceive someone, even with what seems like a small lie, like a white lie, the person you're lying to usually doesn't just switch from believing the truth to believing your lie. That's not what happens.
Oh. What happens then?
They often invent a completely different, usually darker explanation for why you felt the need to lie in the first place.
Ah, okay. The different truth idea. So yeah. Give me an example.
Okay, so you lie to your partner about being hungover because you don't want them to know you drank too much. You think you're just avoiding a minor hassle. But maybe they interpret your vagueness and deception as a sign you're hiding something much bigger. Like maybe you were out cheating or you've got secret financial problems. Your small, harmless scheme suddenly creates this huge, unfounded suspicion.
Right. That makes sense. The lie isn't believed, but it signals something is wrong, and they fill in the blanks with something worse.
Precisely. And imagine that in a high-stakes situation, a diplomatic talk, a corporate crisis. Those invented truths can poison everything permanently. Plus, the manifesto makes another key point. Self-justification is maybe even more dangerous than outright lying to others. Well, if you deliberately lie, at least on some level, you know you're lying. You recognize the gap between reality and what you're saying. But when you engage in self-justification, when you rewrite the story in your own head to make your failure seem like not really a failure or someone else's fault, you actually destroy the possibility of learning, not just for others, but for yourself too.
Because you can't even see the mistake accurately anymore. So the organization or the team or even just you keeps making the same mistake over and over because the internal story always protects the ego.
That's it. And if you follow that thread about lost learning, there's the practical cost too. Losing solidarity. When you constantly treat the people around you like they're just instruments, just pawns to be moved, you lose out on all the amazing things people do when they feel respected and consulted.
You mean like voluntary effort, going the extra mile?
Exactly. People who feel genuinely included and respected will often move mountains for a shared goal. People who feel manipulated, they'll do the bare minimum required. And as the sources point out, that kind of isolation, trying to manage everything yourself, eventually, well, it can make you crazy.
Okay, so let's pivot hard then. If the closed process is often a trap, what's the alternative? The open process. And this isn't presented as just like a nice idea, is it? It's framed as a practical strategy. Like engineering for resilience. At its simplest, it just means laying out your evidence and your reasoning when you propose something. The example given is like if you're on a trip with a friend who's getting irritable. The open process isn't just silently hoping they snap out of it. It's saying, hey, I've noticed your tone's a bit sharp. Based on past trips, I think maybe a quick 15-minute break and a sandwich could really help right now. What do you think? You offer the data and the proposed fix?
Right. That's the everyday example. But you immediately scale that up to high-stakes work. When you're transparent about your reasoning, say, on a complex project, it treats your collaborators like intelligent partners. They can actually give you useful feedback.
So they can spot flaws you missed.
Exactly. You explain why you chose, say, a specific material for a component in an engineering design. That empowers a junior team member to pipe up and say, hang on, doesn't that material perform poorly under the specific temperature conditions we're expecting here?
Mm.
That input could prevent a catastrophic failure down the line. The open process lets you tap into the collective intelligence, dozens of brains, not just your own single fallible one. It's about actually leveraging human capital, which is something those power hoarding strategies actively block.
And that has huge implications for institutions, doesn't it? For their ability to survive and improve. The open process lets organizations tackle problems systemically. Instead of just covering things up or finding a scapegoat, which is often the default in cultures that worship individual genius and punish failure, There's that quote from Carl Sagan warning about this exact thing, about prioritizing a perfect public image over actually fixing deep flaws. He said something like, if we refuse to admit when we make mistakes, then serious error, profound mistakes, will be our companion forever. And you see this, sadly. The sources mention examples like hospitals potentially hiding data about infections linked to maintenance issues, because fixing it is hard and admitting it hurts their reputation, even though patients are at risk.
And in radical contrast to that, the source holds up the airline industry as kind of the gold standard for learning from failure. They talk about it's just culture. The industry has deliberately tried to move away from just blaming and punishing the person at the sharp end, like the pilot, when something goes wrong. They recognize that people involved in accidents rarely need more punishment than their own feelings of responsibility.
So instead of asking who screwed up, they ask, why did this happen?
Precisely. Why did the system allow this error to occur? Why did the pilot make that decision in that moment? They reference Chesley Sullenberger.
The pilot who landed on the Hudson River.
That's him. He often talked about how aviation safety rules are lessons bought with blood, lessons that absolutely must be passed on. Just punishing the pilot when a systemic flaw contributes to an accident, that's just scapegoating. It actually makes things less safe because the next person who sees that flaw might be afraid to report it.
Ah, so the open process there is about blameless reporting, turning individual errors into shared institutional knowledge that saves lives later.
Yes, it builds resilience. And this whole idea reinforces the scope we talked about earlier. The open process is vital for cooperation on those huge long-term projects. Things too big for any one person or even one generation.
Like stabilizing the climate or limiting nuclear weapons or developing sustainable energy.
Exactly. It allows the collective effort to keep going even when individuals face their own limits, illness, retirement, even death. The knowledge persists and grows within the community.
So if the open process is this engine for collective learning and resilience, there must be a deeper reason why it works. Why is it fundamentally tied to, well, reality, not just a clever strategy?
That's the crucial link the manifesto makes. The whole argument rests on the idea that the open process is fundamentally about pursuing truth. And it draws on scientific knowledge to underscore this. The laws of nature, it points out, are universal. They aren't culturally relative. Gravity works the same everywhere. What science discovers was, in a sense, always present to be found in nature.
Okay, so there's an objective reality out there that openness helps us uncover together.
Right, and that's a key distinction. While the meaning we make of facts might differ across cultures, the underlying facts themselves, physics, biology, how viruses spread, those are empirical. They exist whether we like them or not. When you practice the open process, you're essentially agreeing to search for that objective truth collectively, setting aside individual ego or national pride in favor of finding out what's actually real.
And that search for what's real has to overcome our love for the neat, tidy ending, the dramatic satisfaction of the closed process. We love watching Holmes or Poirot take a total mess of clues and snap reveal the single elegant truth. It's so satisfying.
Well,
the argument is we need to redirect that desire for individual brilliance when the problems are planet-sized.
Yes, that's the core conclusion here. Since messing up now, failing to learn collectively, could genuinely lead to, well, universal disaster on some of these big issues. We have to learn as groups, as communities of practice doctors sharing knowledge, diplomats negotiating transparently, engineers collaborating openly. We need to accept, humbly, that most of us are those Worcesters and Watsons.
Trying our best, but definitely not infallible geniuses.
Exactly. Generally well-meaning, but prone to error. And we just can't afford, collectively, to let those errors get swept under the rug, hidden behind some curtain of false certainty, losing the lesson every time.
That really is the core tension, isn't it?
Yeah.
We all kind of secretly fantasize about being the brilliant mastermind. P.G. Wodehouse nails it with Jeeves, right? Mm-hmm. Jeeves is the ultimate closed process operator. He holds back information, manipulates events subtly, deceives Worcester constantly, but always succeeds elegantly.
He does. But Wodehouse's stories are also maybe warnings, because they constantly show what happens when the normal person, Bertie Worcester, tries to run his own schemes using the closed process.
He messes it up every single time.
Every single time. He makes things infinitely worse and always needs Jeeves, the actual genius he was trying to imitate, to miraculously bail him out. The source is essentially saying, we are all Bertie Worcester trying to pull off Jeeves-level schemes, and we're probably going to fail just as spectacularly.
I can definitely relate to some Worcester moments in my own life, you know, trying some minor, overly complicated scheme to avoid one slightly awkward conversation and ending up creating three times the trouble.
That's just human nature, isn't it? And the open process offers maybe one final, quite deep benefit for us Worcesters. Even if you try something openly and you fail, maybe you fail spectacularly, at least the people around you know what you were trying to do. They understand your intent. And that shared understanding, that moral support, can sometimes be a much stronger motivator, a stronger reward than any material gain you might have gotten from a secret success.
That's a powerful thought. Okay, so let's leave our listeners with something to chew on, building on these high stakes we've discussed. If we really accept this idea that fundamentally most of us are Woosters and Watsons, not Holmeses or Jeeveses, especially when facing these huge collective challenges, what's one specific, maybe small, immediate commitment to transparency you could make in your work, maybe, or even at home? Something that might fundamentally change how others see your motives and maybe encourage them to collaborate rather than just react.